Previously on the X and HT Speakeasy.
See, you can say that so much quicker than I can, but yeah, maybe because you decided what that's what's going to be called.
That's right, yes.
Karen Gillan.
Karen Gillan. Oh, Karen Gillan.
For mature readers, duh. Don't sell this to a kid. What are you, nuts? Seriously? Let's not sing about it. That won't sell anything.
No, exactly.
That would just bring more pain.
It's one of the worst comics I've ever read. We have 100-sided dice. It's the size of a bowling ball and weighs about the same.
I'm a lone wolf. I work alone.
You work alone.
I'm like Wolverine.
Thank you so much for bearing with us through this long and difficult time.
And lastly, but not necessarily leastly, that's a terrible use of English.
Oh, dear, leastly?
Leastly.
Poor show.
You're going to edit that bit out?
No.
God damn it.
Third time's a charm.
As Halloween ushers in winter, we huddle up against the darkness here in Studio 3. As the sainted Morrissey put it, there is a light that never goes out. And for us, it's the chance to yak on about film. I'm Rob Wickings.
And I'm Clive Ashenden. On the show today, we dare to face the dice of fate. We have the return, by popular demand, kinda, of our first lucky studio guest into our pit of despair and madness, and we ask the question, is there such a thing as a good remake?
Well, slap my thigh and call me a tom-tom. This is the X and HT Speakeasy.
And it's time for proper introductions to our guests.
Absolutely.
It is, of course, the man, the myth, the legend, that is Simon Aitken, filmmaker extraordinaire.
Hello. Welcome, Simon.
Welcome.
Hi there.
Filling in the gaps for us after Clive had to go off and do a bit of impromptu demon hunting over Halloween. So, sterling work there. Thank you ever so much for stepping into the gap at about 10 minutes' notice.
You're welcome.
Very impressively done, I have to say.
Sometimes you just, you know, good calls.
You've got to do what you've got to do, haven't you?
Evil must be smited.
I notice there's still smitten. Blood sort of just on the glasses, just that top right-hand corner.
That's always the difficult part to arrange with those wipes. Yes, so Simon, why don't you start by telling us a bit about your current projects? Simon is the director of Blood and Roses, and his website is independentrunnings.com.
That's correct.
Where you can watch many of his fantastic shorts, and also there's links there where you can watch on demand his first feature film, Blood and Roses. But you've got a new exciting feature film project on the go, haven't you?
I do. I just finished shooting one segment of it today. It's called Modern Love. It's an anthology film made up of 15 short stories that's about dating, romance, relationships, and it's all set in contemporary London. And today we finished shooting one of the stories that was called The One That Got Away. And the story is, it's about a young lady who falls in love with her best friend and the consequences of that fact. Lesbian woman, straight woman, you know, it's one of those things.
Sounds like fun.
And,
one of those things.
Well, I mean, one of the most intriguing things about this, I mean, we are going to go on to our regularly scheduled items shortly, but... I think it's worth pointing out that I think what's really exciting about the One Love project is basically the way it's being not only financed but kind of put together, which is kind of stage by stage.
That's correct.
It's a good thing for all our kind of independent kind of indie film listeners out there to kind of think about. There is always a way to get it done. So maybe just speak a little bit about that, Simon.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's one of those projects. It's grown. Originally, I did a short film called Sans Sous-titres, which
without subtitles.
Yeah,
The award winning.
The award winning. Yes, we won at the Monaco Film Festival. We won best original short story and best short script. And it was I noticed how it was connecting to people. We've had a lot of screenings, including one where they discussed the film afterwards. I wish I had been there to hear what they were talking about, but it's connected with a lot of people. And so I did another one called Digital Romance, which was about dating over Skype. And again, it's another film that kind of connected to people, because it's something that people are experiencing right now. People are doing this at this moment. So I decided to sort of just keep going, do 13 more short stories, and then just get them out there as like a whole feature, as that whole package, just so that, because at least it would go somewhere. I love short films. I love making short films. But the problem is they don't go anywhere. You know, you might go to festivals, you might win some awards, it might get noticed by industry people, but the short itself, nothing ever happens with it. But a feature film, you can actually go out there and sell, you can actually, you know, have screenings of it. Mm-hmm. Now, the nice thing about doing short segments is that then instead of trying to do 3 weeks or a month or trying to cram it all into a short space of time, I'm taking my time to do each story. So I write each one, and I shoot it, and I edit it.
Gives you that chance to get it right as well, rather than sort of being under some sort of deadline or whatever.
It's being under the gun.
Yeah.
It does mean that I'm going to be working on this for like the next year. I've got 12 more stories to go. I've 3 stories down, 12 more to go. And it's a case of just shooting them whenever we have the money, when we have the resources, the people. And it's a lot tougher than I thought it was going to be. I will say that now. I thought it was going to be quite easy compared to shooting a feature film, doing a 3-week shoot. But it's very challenging. But I do get to work with a lot of actors that I've always wanted to work with.
That's a fascinating project, and obviously we're covering it in detail on Excuses and Half Truths as we'll be following you on your journey as we go through.
And there is a Facebook page where people can find out more about this, including about the crowdfunding side of things.
That's right. It's Modern Love Movie on Facebook. If you do a search on there, you'll find it. And yes, we crowdfunded a bit of money to make the next couple of shorts, and then once the money runs out, we'll be crowdfunding again. But this time, the mistake I made, and I'm going to say this now, I made the mistake of trying to raise the full amount first time out, and it didn't work. So next time, I'm just going to try and raise enough to get the next short made, because it's a smaller number. It's a more achievable number than trying to raise the full amount.
Sounds fantastic.
Yep, and as a donor to the crowdfunding campaign, I've got
same here. I'll put my hand up as well.
Vested interest.
Absolutely.
I could say that it is one of those campaigns where you're not just kind of throwing your money into something and you're not seeing anything out of it. I've already had a DVD of Blood and Roses. Yeah. I'm getting regular updates via the newsletter.
Yeah, the newsletter is actually very good as well. That's what we're signing up to. Simon's doing a great job in keeping people updated.
Depending on your donor level, there are different incentives. There's links to links to other shorts, to other parts of Modern Love that have already been shot that you can watch. And there's lots of exciting things. So you should go there on Facebook and find out more.
Yeah. Go do it now. We'll be sticking links to everything we're talking about on Excuses and Half Truths on the dedicated page for this particular episode of the podcast as well. So you don't even have to write any of this down. It'll be clickable for you.
Good, because hey, who likes to write?
Oh, go man, that writing is so dull. Right, Dice of Fate.
The Dice of Fate spoke last month.
It did.
And they decreed that we will both go and watch 4 films each over the month.
Well,
how do we do, Rob?
Well, the best laid plans of dice and men.
Oh, see what he did there.
Yeah.
Oh.
Life basically got really in my face last month. I managed to see one of the films on my list, one of Clive's films. I did actually manage to catch one other movie that I think was on the long list. And That's it. Sorry. I do have a DVD release that I also want to talk about, so that's my four. So then,
And I guess Simon has very kindly agreed to add to this kind of cornucopia of film reviewing with two of his own.
That's correct.
Marvellous. So it'll be the first time for Simon to actually face the dreaded 50-second flash film challenge.
Oh, okay. I'm going first then.
You can go first if you
okay.
want.
Okay.
Well, we'll spread them out. So, Simon, I'm now waving in Simon's face the 50-second clock.
Okay.
This is what you get.
Right.
And so perhaps you'd like to tell us about Francis Ha first.
Okay.
Go.
Yes. Francis Ha is an independent film from America. It's about a young woman called Francis who's chasing her dreams of being a dancer. But unfortunately, life is getting in the way. And the film is about her pursuit of getting an apartment in New York. It's also about love and how chasing your dream can sort of get in the way. It's really well done. Lovely cinematography, black and white. New York. They also amazingly go to Paris for like a phone conversation. It's like the most expensive phone conversation going. But if it's playing at your local cinema, well worth checking out.
Is it kind of quirky? It seemed a little bit arch from the trailers.
It's a bit quirky.
Look at that. He's well in that. I'm very impressed with that.
Okay, should we go for...
One of mine?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go for one of mine. We are going for Blue Jasmine. It's been described as Woody Allen's best film in a decade, and Blue Jasmine does have a lot going for it. Notably, Cate Blanchett's admirably unhinged central performance as the titular Jasmine. Some of the casting decisions are a little bit out of left field. The reappearance of Andrew Dice Clay, for example, is like, huh? Really? What? But everyone does justice to a script that swings back and forth through time before revealing its final shocking twist. It's as bleak as some of the work he was doing in his 80s heyday, so things like Hannah and Her Sisters and stuff like that. So don't go expecting laughs, but do expect a riveting and powerful piece of dark drama. Right, next up.
Oh, he's so pleased with himself there, listeners. He's like, I've got all my work.
Oh, I did it all.
So next up, let's talk about Prisoners, which I know you have also seen this
I
one.
I have, yes.
Being as it stars Mr. Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, yeah, Gyllenhaal.
See, this is exactly
be
right.
Be careful with that pronunciation. You will
Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal. You will get your head snapped off in certain circles if you mispronounce that. Okay.
I wonder what circles those could be.
We don't like to talk about our personal life. Right, okay. Prisoners, go!
Prisoners, slightly schizophrenic thriller which begins as a Dennis Lehane-style intense crime drama, think Mystic River, and then flirts with horror before becoming a more conventional twisty-turny thriller. Solid performances from Jackman Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal.
and all the rest. But I always felt I was watching people acting, in inverted commas, more entertaining and less bleak than the trailers made it seem.
I'm going to make a shout out to Roger Deakins' extraordinary cinematography here. He made the point of making sure that you never see the sun in this film, and you certainly never do. Weirdly enough, it was shot in Georgia, which it doesn't look like it at all. It's just bleak, rainy, horrible throughout. But yeah, worth a look, really. Next. Simon?
Simon.
Oh, okay. My other one is Prince Avalanche.
Prince Avalanche.
Prince Avalanche is a remake of a German film whose title I cannot remember. It's about two guys working on a road in Texas, and they're marking it with like white lines. Now, the film starts off with there being a forest fire that sort of devastates the whole area. But the film really doesn't sort of use that. You feel like at the beginning it's a metaphor for something that's going to happen, some sort of, you know, anger that's going to bubble up, but it never really materializes. It's very indie, very quirky, not much happens, very slow film, but I the time went past, and I thought it was fine.
Can't say further than that, I guess. Nailed it. Nailed it. The boys are natural. Clive?
Yes. How I Live Now.
How I Live Now.
How I Live Now, adapted from the acclaimed young adult novel by Meg Rossoff, and directed by Kevin MacDonald, obviously famous for Last King of Scotland, and various documentary films. And he really does use his documentary background here to kind of good effect in various action set pieces. It's a coming-of-age romance set against a dystopian sci-fi background. You've got fish-out-of-water city girl from America. Daisy is basically dumped on her English relatives, and she falls for her cousin, as you do. And then events outside shatter their rural idyll. It's kind of like a teenager. It's gauche, earnest, and gawky with moments of beauty, but it's kind of a bit... It's also a bit strange and weird.
Oh. Sold. Strange and weird works for me. My next one. So I'm wandering merrily off my list now. I'm into the long list. We're talking about Le Weekend. Roger Michel, director of Notting Hill, takes a much bleaker view of love in this Hanif Qureshi scripted drama. Think The Dark Mirror of Before Sunrise. It sees Jim Broadbent and Lindsay Duncan as a couple taking a short break to Paris and using the holiday as a chance to rekindle their relationship. As they wander through a very beautifully shot French capital, their verbal snipes and jabs become more pointed, and it looks as if this weekend will have a very sad ending indeed. It's dark, funny, moving, and explores the reasons why people stay together and the tiny things that can break them apart. It's a must from a creative team that I think are at the absolute height of their powers. Next.
It's almost like, Rob, that you've just watched films you wanted to see and ignored what the dice said.
No, it's not true. Well, I will actually make a point here that two of the films on my list, Metallica, Through the Never, was only showing at IMAXs, popped up, disappeared again. I just couldn't get time off from work to actually go and see them when they were being scheduled. And Not Another Happy Ending, the Karen Gillan thing, I think was in cinemas for about a week. Vanished. Couldn't get to it. Didn't make it out to the provinces at all. And I do tend to try and see movies sort of within a walkable distance of where I am. So, hey, that's my excuse. I'm sticking to it.
Okay, then. So, next, Machete Kills.
Machete Kills.
Robert Rodriguez's sequel to Machete. The film spawned from a trailer on the Tarantino-Rodriguez collaboration Grindhouse. The original was very much a kind of... sort of twist on the blaxploitation formula, looking with a Mexican hero. Danny Trejo is Machete, the kind of the toughest man in all Mexico. So basically what you get here is the same again. The action is slightly poor, but there's lots going on. You get lots and lots of cameos, Antonio Banderas, Lady Gaga, Mel Gibson, again, trying to rehabilitate his career. It's silly, disposable fun, but it is utterly disposable. If you like that, look forward to Machete Kills Again in Space.
Ay, ay, ay. Me gusta más. Okay, my last one, wandering merrily again, away from the cinema completely now. I'm going to talk about something that is just out on DVD in the last couple of weeks. Joss Whedon's version of Much Ado About Nothing. It's a romp, which it should be. I mean, you can't do Much Ado darkly at all. If you're a Whedon-holic in particular, there's lots of fun to be had as cast members of Buffy, Angel, Firefly, Doll's House, The Avengers all show up to stretch their acting glands. There's the chance also to see Joss's house up close and personal. Nice kitchen. The man's got a lovely, lovely kitchen. So there you go. If you're a fan of Through the Keyhole, this is the chance to see
what
that.
What if you're actually a fan of Shakespeare, Rob?
If you're a fan of Shakespeare, I mean, its origins as a weekend drama exercise are very clear there. And it's done with a lot of wit and charm. Buzzes past in a nicely diverting manner. It's fine.
Okay, lastly, but not leastly, we have definitely the most obscure film that was...
I'm very impressed you managed to catch this.
Before we get into the thing properly, I'm going to have to explain. Okay, this film, The Lebanese Rocket Society... It's so obscure. It didn't get reviewed in any of the London papers.
Wow.
Or any of the national press, because it was showing at one cinema, and it's showing this week, I think only at the ICA. So apparently that counts as a release.
Just about.
So you may our listeners may find difficulty actually going to see this. It may hang on at the ICA for another week or so. But look out for it on demand and kind of through other channels, because this is one which isn't going to get a wide release.
Was the screening room particularly full? Was it half empty? Or?
I prefer not to talk about that. Because that kind of talk can detract from whether it's actually a good film or not.
Okay, fine. Well, tell us about that then.
Okay, Lebanese Rocket Society. Documentary about the Lebanese space program in the 1960s.
Good God.
Who knew? Well, not me, for one. This was, I was slightly kind of thinking, is this going to be like a mockumentary? Is this a wind-up? But actually, this is the true story of how an Armenian-Lebanese professor at a university started a space rocket program at his university in the Lebanon in the early 1960s. You know, we're talking about kind of at the height of space mania, where you had Telstar going up, Sputnik, and all the various kind of trials and tribulations they had with that, how the government got involved, how, you know, shooting rockets in the Middle East apparently can cause problems with your neighbours. So it's really worth going to see if you can.
Well, there you go. That's our 50-second flash film challenge. Thank you to everyone who managed to actually do what they were told, as opposed to some of us that are just lazy.
Oh, it's not your fault. But, you know, I have heard it say that they're, you know, that those who mock the dice of fate are somehow kind of karmically cursed. So I really hope that doesn't come back to bite you in some way.
I'm sure that's not going to happen.
No.
Okay, let's move on to our main discussion of this podcast. We're talking about remakes.
Which is ironic, because this podcast is actually a remake of a 1964 Armenian radio show, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
It's something we've been trying to keep under our hats, but you know, the Speakeasy was Armenia's, you know, biggest radio show, and we got... you know, all those bootleg tapes, and basically we've just been rehashing the same old material.
We are still trying to get the host of that show, Darko Milosevic, into actually have a chat about that, but when that will happen, who knows.
But then we'll have to pay him some money, won't we, Rob?
He is notoriously mercenary, definitely, but we'll give it a try, who knows.
Well, yeah, you know, we josh, but that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about basically... yeah, the concept of the remake, the reboot,
the reimagining.
Everyone loves that term.
Oh, I feel sick.
People seem to have died out that term, thankfully, because it was a while there, like early 2000s, where, it's not a remake, it's a reimagining.
You know, which made it better somehow. You know, so, in fact, that was a good way of doing it, because a reimagining you knew to avoid, like the plague, because it was just guaranteed to be dreadful.
Isn't it funny that they would use that term, yet a lot of the remakes that have come out recently have no imagination at all? They're literally rehashes. I think we should start off with the latest remake that's going to be hitting cinemas any day now. I know it's out over in the States. I've seen lots of reviews. It's the Carrie remake.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes.
And from what I've heard, it's people are saying, what was the point? They're actually comparing it to the Gus Van Sant version of Psycho. That it's literally in points, it's shot for shot.
Wow, that's...
that. Well, that's in some ways that's disturbing, and in other ways that's completely understandable, because I think a lot of people are starting to turn away from the whole notion of a remake being a valid thing at all.
But then, I mean, you can almost, and I say almost, understand the idea of a kind of shot-for-shot remake of something in a different language, which you're then transposing to the English language, which we've had from Michael Haneke with Funny Games.
True.
You know, that is essentially shot-for-shot, isn't
it? Yeah,
yeah.
And also, you know, we had it in a much more kind of mercenary form with The Assassin. Remake of La Femme Nikita.
Yeah.
Which... you know, was the only time it sort of deviated from the shot for shot remake was to give us a nice, kind of absolutely cliched falling in love montage to the strains of Nina Simone's Feeling Good. I remember it was sort of skipping through the park arm in arm, sort of buying ice creams together. It was exactly like the sort of mocking montage from A Naked Gun,
right?
But without the laughing at Platoon, you know, it's pretty much that, you know. Yeah. That is one school of remake, and
the whole notion of the sort of foreign language remake does kind of turn my stomach slightly. And you've got things like The Vanishing as well, which is probably one of the most egregious examples of that. You know, it's a Hollywood remake of a particularly bleak thriller and shoehorning a happy ending in there.
And those of you playing a drinking game at home, that was egregious, so that means you get to down two shots, as we know, because Rob tries to get that word into every podcast.
It has to be done.
It has to be done.
Yeah. You can download the drinking game list at excusesandhalftruths.com/drinking-game.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. One thing we did do this time, which worked out particularly well, was, Rob, you opened things up on that there social media.
I did. I opened it up on... Yes, I opened up a discussion thread on both Twitter and Facebook. Twitter, we got tumbleweed. Frankly, no one responded at all. But my Facebook boys, well, what can I say? Boys and girls, fantastic work. Huge thread there with loads of people chipping on what they... thought were good remakes.
Let's keep it positive.
Yeah,
there
absolutely.
There is such thing as a good remake.
Yes, there are.
I mean, when they take something that's, you know, it's like an old film, and they do something different with it, or they go back to the source material, and I mean, they go properly back to the source material. I mean, I always think I actually added to the list. And
you
I,
did. In I, fact, Simon was the first one on the list.
Yeah, and of course, I said The Thing, and then corrected myself and said John Carpenter's The Thing, because it's a film now that's been remade twice.
Yes.
Because I have to say, the reimagining prequel pile of shit that The Thing 2011? Yeah.
I mean,
it was horrible.
Strictly speaking, that they marketed it as not being a remake, as being a prequel, but effectively it was the same movie.
It was both a prequel and a reboot. Yeah. You know, basically, you told exactly the same story again, with the idea you could then continue on with various characters. And
that was shoehorned in, I felt.
Yeah.
And the reason why it was shoehorned in is because... one of the characters who's there and jumps in the helicopter, the one who's shooting, was actually attacked by the Thing in an earlier scene. So that would make him a Thing, and he's shooting at the dog Thing. And I'm just like, you've not really thought this through. Seriously. I think by that point, most people didn't even notice.
I think a lot of people had already gone up to go, because that was it was kind of during the credits, wasn't it?
Yeah.
For the fans.
Yeah, absolutely. So, looking at our Facebook list here, shout-outs to a few people here as well. Sam Mangan was the first to note David Cronenberg's remake of The Fly. Good call. James O'Shea mentioned Scarface, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Now, that's an interesting one, because there's been so many versions of that over the years, but...
They've all been pretty good. Fair but what's call. Interesting is a lot of those ones have been made by kind of auteur type filmmakers or kind of indie filmmakers, and they've basically taken the paranoia theme and the sort of the central kind of people being taken over by pod aliens theme, and they've kind of transposed it to their time. And that does seem to be one of those stories that's very flexible, that it does allow you to do that. Mm. I can only think of the recent Nicole Kidman remake, which is absolutely appalling, The Invasion, but as the kind of exception that yeah. proves the rule. But the, otherwise, you know, the other iterations, I think, are all worth looking at.
Yeah. A couple of ones that I wouldn't have thought of, or at least surprised me. Aurora Bent mentioned the Manchurian Candidate. Dob Wade was the first to mention the Thomas Crown Affair with Pierce Brosnan and René Russo. We've got a good one from Robin Cannon, Some Like It Hot as a remake.
Remake of a German film.
Yep.
Although I understand that they're, having read the kind of sort of interviews with Billy Wilder book that Cameron Crowe did, that there is large differences. I don't think that basically this Valentine's Day Massacre bit was as a wholly added by Billy Wilder.
Yeah.
So, you know, he felt like there needed to be some motivation to the dressing up in drag part.
Really? You need motivation for that? Okay, fine.
Apparently so.
Who else? Paul Davis, our director friend Paul Davis, tagged both Dracula and Frankenstein as being remakes, which is fair call, but that stuff's been remade.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you know, do they kind of almost like belong in their own category, kind of adaptations of kind of endlessly kind of recyclable kind of source material, characters who from literary works, which are so strong, where people come back to them?
You're talking presumably like Sherlock Holmes, James Bond, yes. for example, that kind of thing. Possibly Judge Dredd as well. I mean, yeah, the two Dredd movies, Dredd 3D.
Knock on wood, we hope it's strong enough to come back for more.
The drinking game, by the way, that's necking back the whole bottle, seeing as I've managed to mention Judge Dredd, so. Get that in there. Who else?
He's the law.
He is the law. Just spinning back down, seeing what else we've got here.
Well, I know your favourite remake is The Magnificent Seven,
Seven,
which somebody else mentioned.
Yeah. Ben Chodd mentions that.
Interesting you bring up Kurosawa, because he's a director who's had his works remade a lot of times.
Yeah.
Because he's had Seven Samurai been remade
many times.
And also Yojimbo.
Yeah, and also Rashomon.
And indeed, you've got that argument that Star Wars is effectively a remake of The Hidden Fortress.
Yes, which, you know, it does bear very strong structural similarities, doesn't it? And, you know, you have the two bickering peasant characters very similar to the kind of...
Well, he's gone on record to say it was a big influence. He saw that film when he was writing the script for Star Wars, so he changed the point of view. At the moment, there is a comic out by Dark Horse, which is... They've taken the original Star Wars scripts and they've put it into comic book form.
Oh, the Star Wars.
The Star Wars, yeah. And it's a lot different to what we got. A lot different. It's not told from the point of view of the droids.
Is that The Adventures of Luke Starkiller?
Yeah, yes. I think it is.
I guess they're sort of talking about the remakes of the Kurosawa one, the various things. I mean, you can't help but sort of think about Yojimbo as a kind of source text that's then been remade several times by different filmmakers, and, you know, it's come off particularly well. I mean, Fistful of Dollars, I love, and then, I mean, you've also got
even Last Man Standing.
Red Harvest, all that sort of stuff. I mean, well, Last Harvest, the novel, is supposedly, you know, is that the thing that inspired Kurosawa in the first place?
Ah, interesting. So how far back can you track that?
Yeah,
that
don't know. So you have the question of kind of originality and, you know...
Well, talking about remakes. We're talking about films that have, you know, spawned other films.
Mm.
I mean, if you go into literature, then there's loads of films that have been made or inspired by works of literature.
Mm.
That's
a different path, really, isn't it? Because there's so many films that have been either inspired by or directly based on.
Yeah, the thing that gets slightly dispiriting is when you basically get things being remade for contractual reasons, for instance, I know Universal Studios, basically they make a Dracula movie of some description every 10 years, something like that.
Because they kind of have to hang on to the copyright.
So they keep the copyright, you know. Yeah. And
well, that I don't mind, because at least they try and do something different each time. What I'm getting fed up of at the moment is the remakes like Carrie, where it's like they take a film, it's well known, it's well loved, and they go, we're going to make it for today's audience. And what do? They just have a different cast, different director, new technology, CGI, but it's the same story.
Mm.
There's nothing different about it. There's no imagination in it. At all.
So, I mean, to get into semantics, is what you're talking about like a reboot rather than remake?
I mean, if we take Spider-Man.
Yeah.
We had the not-so-amazing Spider-Man. I'm sorry. I thought it was terrible, and I had to sit through the origin story again.
Mm.
You know, it was only like 10 years since the first Sam Raimi film had come out, had been made from that point. And so, everybody on the planet knew how Peter Parker, you know, becomes Spider-Man. But watching it was like they did it their own way, but there was just nothing really that much different from it. And also, it felt like it was being rushed. You guys see the remake of Total Recall?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Well, actually, no, I saw half the remake of Total Recall and then turned it off.
Yeah. Now, again, that was a film that they said they had gone back to the source material and the Philip K. Dick story.
Mm.
We can remember it for you wholesale.
That's correct. Clearly not.
Absolutely not.
Clearly they had just gone back to the Arnie film. And the problem was about the Arnie film is you need Arnold Schwarzenegger in it.
Yeah.
Because that's what holds it together. So, you know, it was terrible. But it was felt like... With the Paul Van Hove one, it kind of gives you a bit of time to get into it.
Mm.
You know, you meet him as Doug Quaid, you get to meet his wife, you see him as a construction worker, then he goes to Recall and then it goes all to shit. It's like within 10 minutes he's in Recall and the guy, you know, and the bad guys turn up while he's literally sitting in the chair. And you're just like, what? It was like on speed.
It almost felt to me like those films you get where they basically bin everything about a remake apart from the title and maybe some little iconic bits, like, for example, The Italian Job.
Oh.
Kept the title,
yeah.
Kept the minis, everything else changed.
Yes.
And there's a big school of that sort of stuff.
But can you not say that, you know, that they're trying to do something different?
I mean,
the remake of The Italian Job, it's not a great film, but it's a different, entertaining genre film.
Completely different film, and it's yes, like, well, it is. Why is it called The Italian Job? It's called the Italian Job because they know that people will go and see it.
Well,
if it was called The LA Job, which was it's more an apt title, yeah, for that
that's,
film,
that's much more accurate.
Then, but they probably wouldn't have the recognition they get with The Italian Job,
yeah. And so, also, you're making a quick buck off a much better film's reputation, basically. Exactly. And there's it's like that. Stallone version of Get Carter.
Is there not a danger here that we're kind of, you know, on the one hand we're saying, oh, I hate these films that just give us exactly the same thing again, and then we're saying I hate these films that just sort of just take a couple of things in the title and do their own thing and basically make a completely different film. That's slightly contrary, isn't it?
It is, but I think the thing is the reasoning behind it.
Okay.
So, okay, I'm going to go back to The Thing.
Mm,
because that's somebody who loved the original.
Yes.
You can see it's even playing in Halloween, the film.
Mm.
Yes.
One of the kids is watching the original film.
Howard Hawks, well, yeah. Christian Nybe's,
yeah.
maybe
the Howard thing Hawks. From another world.
The Thing yeah. from Another World.
And there's some wonderful homages, especially the words burning into the screen.
Yeah.
So he's taken that source material, but he's gone back. He's gone back to the original source material and he's to the book and he's done that and he's made it his own, but in the same spirit of that other film.
Yeah.
There's still stuff in it from that other film that's clearly there, but he's made it his own and he's made it a great film. And it's from love of the original, the text of the original film. The guys who made the Italian Job remake clearly did not love the Italian job. There was no, that was quick buck. That was, we want to make money off a film that, you know, off a title. It may have been, it may, you know what they might have done? It might have been a completely different script. This has happened before. Mm. Saw 2 originally was another script. And they went, oh, why don't we make this a Saw film? We put Jigsaw in there instead of your other character. And that's what it feels like with the Italian Job remake. It was just, you know, we've got the title and we know that we'll get the cast we want.
Yeah.
And the backing and, well, this is a studio film, so they just threw money at.
Yeah. We're likely to get a big opening weekend. That'll do. Yeah. Thank you very much.
It was clearly for the money. It was a studio decision. While John Carpenter's The Thing came from the director who wanted to do something, you know, original with a film.
Mm. Okay, well, I won't argue with that. I mean, because I love The Thing, both iterations. Well, not the remake.
No.
Not the remake of the remake that's also a prequel. Oh dear, it gets so confusing.
It's very easy to get tied up in or not.
You know, while we're talking about things which things wind this, particularly wind this up. Yay, yeah, things, see what I did there.
Yeah.
Things that particularly wind us up about the remake thing. One of the things that really winds me up is when the remake feels a need to sort of sneer at the original and sort of kind of basically take a dump on it and say, oh, we're above that kind of thing. The one that immediately springs to mind is the remake of Clash of the Titans, where they put in a bit with a little kind of clockwork owl as a sort of callback, and they basically give, they sort of like, they kick it and sort of is like, what's this rubbish?
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, well, look, no one's saying that the original Clash of the Titans is a great film, but it has some heart, it has some real artistry in Ray Harryhausen's creations. And, you know, it's actually got better character acting in that film than the remake has.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's just that sneering, that kind of superior attitude of kind of, oh, you know, this was, you know, they didn't have money for proper effects then. It often seems to be the thing that it's kind of somehow childish, and you know, it's like, oh, well, we took this tawdry source material and we made it into a proper film. And you're like, hang on a minute.
You didn't.
The people who would go to see this film because they love the original, what are you saying to them? You're saying that they're stupid and you're better than them.
Even though that really
annoys me.
Even though it was a stupid blockbuster film.
It was.
I'll give you an example where they did, of a remake that they did it right. And that was J.J. Abrams' first Star Trek film. Now, what they did, which they could have quite easily done, is, okay, so that is a reboot.
Yes.
You got, they restart the story from scratch, they change it. But what they do is they say, this is an alternative timeline.
Hmm.
Original track, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, even Enterprise. That happened. You've got that. You know, nobody's sneering at that. This is an alternative. This is what would happen if this guy had come from the future and disrupted the timeline. Then they dropped the ball with Into Darkness.
Because they tried to sort of
reintroduce
the original timeline again.
So what happened? So the first one said, we're doing it our own way. And you thought, great, I can't wait to see the next one. What did they do?
They do a remake.
They do a remake of Wrath of Khan.
Or, as you put it, a karaoke version Because it was like, it's like, well, these moments in there, there's these beats. So we've got to have them in there. But the film, it's one of these films where you watch it and you really enjoy it. You're going along because it's going along at such a pace and you're really enjoying it. It's quite fun.
Mm.
And then you come out of the cinema and you go, wait a minute. And it just, and you think, well, what the hell are they going to do for the next one? Now, they can't do Search for Spock because Spock's alive. Spoiler. Kirk's alive. Spoiler.
Not only is Spock alive, but he's alive twice.
Yeah. There's two of them.
There's too many Spocks.
Mr. Well, I can't tell you anything about the other timeline, but...
Let me just say this.
Let me just say this. So, yes, Khan's the worst person ever. You better go and get some humpback whales.
Oh, and watch out for anyone called Cybok.
Yes, and watch out for that Klingon moon. And also, I don't know about you guys, but they really missed a trick. Really missed a trick. They could have done Kirk's final words again. I know Generations is not a great film, but when Kirk does die, it's a lovely line, and I wish they'd put it in Into Darkness.
Yeah.
And he died with, oh my. Sorry, that's more George Takei there, but he does say, oh my.
He does. Well, I think before any more bile gets sort of spewed all over the microphone here, perhaps we should wrap things up by just going round and each of us in turn sort of basically maybe suggesting a film that we as filmmakers would actually quite be interested in remaking.
Mm.
Yeah, sure.
And and on a nice positive note, rather than sort of just spiraling further down into the kind of like remakes.
I did say it was a pit of darkness in here.
Oh, it is, but that's how we like it.
Absolutely.
So, Simon, as our guest, would you like to kick us off? What film would you like to remake, sir?
Well, the one that springs to mind, and I really would do this with trepidation, but I would say Hell Drivers. That
is that the Cy Enfield film?
Yes, it's the one that's got early appearance of Sean Connery.
Oh yeah, I know the one.
Yeah, it's got
Patrick McGowan.
Patrick McGowan is the bad guy. Yeah,
it's kind of almost like Wages of Fear, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. It is.
And is it Stanley?
Yeah, it's the
Stanley Baker. Baker is the lead. It's a real testosterone fueled kind of sort of British noir action
with big
film.
Trucks.
It's good. It is good actually. Yeah.
It. I don't know. You couldn't do it with. It would have to be set in the same time period. I feel
it'd have to be a period movie.
Yeah, because you just don't see those trucks on the road anymore. Not in that kind of level. Not with that kind of having to get so many deliveries done in a day.
So what is it particularly about that story that makes you think, I've got a spin to put on that, I've got something?
It's, I don't know if I've got a spin on it. It's just a film that springs to mind. It was like at gunpoint I had to do a remake. The thing is, I personally like doing sort of original material. I mean, coming from a guy who has been accused of remaking a film, because I have been accused of remaking the Roger Van Deen Blood and Roses.
Which I believe is actually screening as part of the BFI's Gothic film
series. Is it? Ah.
So you can watch it and realise it has absolutely nothing in common with all, Simon's
All
Blood
it
and
shares
Roses.
Is the same title. And mm-hmm. And when I came up with the title, I didn't even realise there was another film with the same title. It happens, but I have been accused of remaking it.
So
by people who didn't even see the bloody film.
Well, there you go.
And that, listeners, is the sound of the record being set straight. Rob.
Yes.
What are you going to remake, sir?
Logan's Run.
Yeah.
Love. A huge, huge fan of the original William Dolan novel. I've still got my dad's battered paperback copy of that book, and I read it religiously once a year. I do like the movie, the 1975.
So was it like a novelization of the film, or was
no
was
no,
it,
no
it was
no.
The source novel. Okay.
The source novel, yeah. Written in 1968. The original novel is probably one of the most propulsive cinematic things that you're ever likely to read. So comparing that with the perfectly okay but a bit staid, a bit plodding, a bit slow 1975 version, they're chalk and cheese. They're two completely different things. Logan's Run has been up for a remake for the best part of 20 years now. There's been various different names thrown at it. Most recently, Ken Levine, who's the guy behind the BioShock games, is down to write a script for it. I don't see what the problem is, frankly. You've got the book's there. Film the book. That's what I'd do.
There you go.
Clive.
Yeah. I've got a couple of things actually, but
you surprise me.
Yeah, but I'll just do the one. I think I can't believe I'm going to say this because I feel I'm very much setting myself up for a fall here. But one of the film I'll remake is the John Carpenter film because that's gone so well in the past.
Oh yeah, absolutely. John Carpenter swimmingly. Films.
Yeah, The Fog.
Well, actually, I think actually The Fog is a film that actually could do with a remake, even though it has been remade.
Could do with a decent remake.
There is a Fog remake.
It could do with a proper remake, or it could do with people actually making James Herbert's The Fog.
That would be interesting.
But no, the one I would remake would be Christine.
Oh, okay.
Ah.
Which, based on the Stephen King novel.
Yeah.
So, you know, very solid storytelling. I mean, I wouldn't remake it because I believe there's anything wrong with the original Carpenter film. What interests me about doing something with that is actually to take that story and set it in Detroit as it is now.
Oh.
Okay, yeah.
And because I think that whole thing about the car that was built in Detroit, and I think you set it in Detroit now, you have a character that's living in Detroit as it is now, then I think that you have actually something interesting and kind of different to say.
Yeah.
I think that really sets it apart from the original film. You can still have it about the kind of the teenage kind of misfit character who his only outlet is through the car and how that kind of goes wrong. But almost, you know, the kind of spirit that's kind of possessing the car is almost like the spirit of kind of Detroit,
oh, yeah.
of how it's been put down.
Mm.
And I think there's you could use that as a kind of as a vehicle. Excuse the pun.
That's a shot and a half on the drinking game, by the way, everybody.
Yeah. So no, because you know, let's face it, you wouldn't necessarily, you know, as an escapist kind of night out at the multiplex, want to go and see an earnest drama about the fall of Detroit and where we are now. But this is the kind of thing I think that you can really do well with genre films, is to sort of take contemporary issues, take, you know, kind of to actually talk about real people, real situations, but do it within the framework of a genre film.
Yeah.
And I think this would fit the bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would be my
definitely
call, Christine.
Yeah. Good call. Okay, well, that's our discussion on remakes. Do feel free to pitch in at the website if you've got anything that we need to talk about, anything that we've missed. And oh my goodness, the Dice of Fate has made an appearance. The D20 is out. The D100 is back in its cage somewhere. We're doing the new music blog challenge this time. Well, sorry, next time round. The plan for this particular game is we have a list of 20 music blogs. We're going to roll for how many each?
We're going to roll for 5 each.
5 each.
So, and our guest, Simon, is going to do the rolling of the dice. He's going to sort of, his dice rolls are going to sort of decree what we're going to listen to. So the idea is that basically all of these are kind of sort of daily music blogs, aren't they?
Yeah.
Essentially, so we're going to be going on you know, 5 each day, listening to, and that's going to be a new way to open ourselves up to new music, to kind of get ourselves out of a kind of comfort zone of listening to Six Music or whatever our particular fancy is.
It's very easy to get locked into a little groove there, and
so
what
you know,
we've always been about is unlocking that groove.
Absolutely. And so, the Dice of Fate, through the agency of their prophet, Mr. Simon Aitken, are going to decree what we're going
to
do.
We bow to the prophet. So there's a big list here. I mean, you know, everything from the biggies like The Guardian, Enemy, Pitchfork, all the way down to Gold Flake Paint. I know them not. Maybe I will know them soon.
Maybe you will. Maybe that's a prophecy there. Okay, Simon, so if you'd like to do the honours, basically, do you want to upload it on that? And then, all right, that's how we'll
do
it.
So we'll do five for me, five for Clive.
Number
two is my first one, The Enemy.
Enemy's new music blog.
Yep, enemy.com/new music. My second pick. Come on, Dicey.
Five.
Number five. No Country for New Nashville. No Country for New Nashville, yesterday, Bob.
Alt country.
Alt country. Ad digs me the alt country. Next.
Number 13. Lucky for some.
Lucky for some. Well, possibly lucky for me. Crack in the Road. I know them not. It's a new one on me.
But you will.
But I will. Fourth.
We've had that one, haven't we?
Yes. Yep.
That's a nine.
That's number nine, which is Breaking More Waves. And my last one. Yeah. As the dot.
Ten.
Number ten. Pop Justice. Poppy Loveliness. Okay.
You're familiar with already, aren't
I
you?
Love, but in fact, I did agitate for Pop Justice to be on this list, so yay me. First of five for Clive.
17.
Number 17. Real horror show.
Nice and appropriate at this time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Horrorshowtunes.com. Second.
Eight.
Numero eight. Top House Music Blog. Yeah, boy.
Keeping it house. Yeah. 19.
Numero 19 is Cruel Rhythm. Cruelrhythm.tumblr.com.
Okay.
Number two, nope.
No,
roll again.
It's already bagsy.
Number three, Pitchfork.
Ah, hipsters.
Hipsters, gotta love it. Pitchfork.com/reviews/tracks.
One more
for Clive, please. So.
You had that one.
We've had that one, yeah.
17.
We've had.
12.
The Von Pipp Musical Express track of the day.
Excellent.
TheVPMe.com. There we go.
Brilliant. So the idea is that we are going to listen to these blogs, as we said, and hopefully for our 50-second flash track fest on the next one.
Beautifully said.
Thank you. Oh, put my teeth in and everything. So for our next speakeasy, what we're going to do is try and pick one recommendation which we've gleaned from each of our various music blogs, if you see what I mean.
Mm.
So that means for all you house music fans, there will be at least one house music track on the list. So
Clive Ashenden's Slave to the Rhythm.
Absolutely. Obviously, if we absolutely hate one of them and can't get anything, then that will just be something we'll have to kind of fess up to.
We'll just have to tough that one out.
But, you know, I think we have quite, you know, we're open to new things, aren't we?
We are. We will publish that full long list on the blog as well. So do feel free to listen along. And if you think there's something that we've missed out on, then do shout up. Too late now because we've done the rolls, but we're always interested to hear about new music blogs anyway. We are voracious in our appetite. Voracious, that's two shots on the X and HT speakeasy drinking game.
It is, yeah. And
I believe that's about it. Yes, we were trying to keep things down and short, and we've spectacularly failed yet again.
We kept it under the hour, Mark.
We kept it under the hour, just
that's
about.
A good length for a podcast.
There we go. See, that's an expert podcaster talking right there. Simon Aitken regularly appearing on podcasts up and down the country as we speak.
Yes.
As you can tell by the huskiness of his throat.
Yes. This is number two this week. I've Seen Things and Stuff Man at the weekend. And tomorrow I'm recording another podcast for Filmworks, where we're going to talk about The Hitcher and Near Dark.
Filmwork, that's film W-E-R-K, yes? Yep. And you can find both of those through your iTunes store, can you?
Yes, they're both on iTunes, yes,
yep.
They are.
So you can find them through that or through other means,
yes.
I think.
They have Facebook pages and websites, and so on.
Google them. And yeah, so it just leaves us to thank our first ever guest.
Woo!
for, you know, firstly for his help on our Halloween special podcast, and also for joining us for our discussions and mitherings and reviews today. And yeah, and we must once again point you in the direction of independentrunnings.com.
Please,
and
do check
also
that out.
The Modern Love Facebook page. And Simon, are you on Twitter?
Yes, I am.
And what would be your Twitter handle, sir?
I have two. I have Simon_Aiken and Modern Love Movie.
Again, we'll stick links to that on on the blog.
There you go. And if you wish to contact us, you can go to our website, or rather, Mr. Rob's. Mr. Rob is the
Hi there.
Is the owner and curator of Excuses and Half Truths.
Owner
and
operator.
Occasionally he lets me come on and do things.
It has been known, as long as he's well behaved. Excusesandhalftruths.com. I am the owner operator, established 1966. No refunds.
What if I want to tweet you, Rob? How do I do that?
I'm Conojito, Conojito, or you can check out occasional updates through at XHT Speakeasy. That's your lot. And of course, we're on the iTunes now. Yay.
So you can subscribe.
Please
can
do.
Are we on the Android store?
If we are, it's the first I've heard of it.
Okay, so maybe we want to
look
into
maybe
that.
We need to look
but
into
we're
that
also
one.
On SoundCloud if you're not into the whole iTunes thing, and obviously through excusesandhalftruths.com. And I think that's enough various kind of tweets and handles and hashtags and things.
Again, there will be clickable links to everything, and it will probably take longer than it will take to actually edit this podcast together to get all those links together.
Thank you very much for listening.
Speak to you soon.
Bye.